Chapter 5. Is not either impossible or impracticable, particularly on this one account, that almost all the country business would be managed by running bills, and those the longest abroad of any, their distance keeping them out, to the increasing the credit, and consequently the stock of the bank. Of the multiplicity of banks. What is touched at in the foregoing part of this chapter refers to one bank royal to preside, as it were, over the whole cash of the kingdom. But because some people do suppose this work fitter for many banks than for one, I must a little consider that head. And first, allowing those many banks could, without clashing, maintain a constant correspondence with one another, in passing each other's bills as current from one to another, I know not, but it might be better performed by many than by one. For as harmony makes music in sound, so it produces success in business. A civil war among merchants is always the reign of trade. I cannot think a multitude of banks could so consist with one another in England, as to join interests and uphold one another's credit, without joining stocks too. I confess, if it could be done, the convenience to trade would be visible. If I were to propose which way these banks should be established, I answer, allowing a due regard to some gentlemen who have had thoughts of the same, whose methods I shall, not so much as touch upon, much less discover. My thoughts run upon quite different methods, both for the fund and the establishment. Every principal town in England is a corporation, upon which the fund may be settled, which will sufficiently answer the difficult and chargeable work of suing for a corporation by patent or act of parliament. A general subscription of stock being made, and by deeds of settlement placed in the mayor and aldermen of the city or corporation for the time being, in trust, to be declared by deeds of uses, some of the directors, being always made members of the said corporation, and joined in the trust, the bank hereby becomes the public stock of the town, something like what they call the rents of the town house in France, and is managed in the name of the said corporation, to whom the directors are accountable, and they back again to the general court. For example, suppose the gentleman or tradesman of the county of Norfolk, by a subscription of cash, designed to establish a bank. The subscriptions being made, the stock is paid into the chamber of the city of Norwich, and managed by a court of directors, as all banks are, and chosen out of the subscribers, the mayor only of the city to be always one. To be managed in the name of the corporation of the city of Norwich, but for the uses in a deed of trust, to be made by the subscribers, and mayor and aldermen, at large mentioned. I make no question, but a bank thus settled would have as firm a foundation as any bank need to have, and every way answer the ends of a corporation. Of these sorts of banks England might very well establish 15, at the several towns hereafter mentioned. Some of which, though they are not the capital towns of the counties, yet are more the center of trade, which in England runs in veins, like mines of metal in the earth. Canterbury, Salisbury, Exeter, Bristol, Worcester, Shrewsbury, Manchester, Newcastle upon Tyne, Leeds, or Halifax, or York, Warwick or Birmingham, Oxford or Reading, Bedford, Norwich, Colchester. Every one of these banks to have a cashier in London, unless they could all have a general correspondence and credit with the Bank Royal. These banks in their respective counties should be a general staple and factory for the manufactures of the said county, where every man, that a goods made, might have money at a small interest for advance, the goods in the meantime being sent forward to market, to a warehouse for that purpose erected in London, where they should be disposed of to all the advantages the owner could expect, paying only 1% commission. Or if the maker wanted credit in London either for Spanish wool, cotton, oil, or any goods, while his goods were in the warehouse of the said bank, his bill should be paid by the bank to the full value of his goods, or at least within a small matter. these banks, either by correspondence with each other, or an order to their cashier in London, might with ease so pass each other's bills, that a man who has cash at Plymouth, and wants money at Berwick, may transfer his cash at Plymouth to Newcastle in half an hour's time, without either hazard, or charge, or time, allowing only 0.5% exchange, and so of all the most distant parts of the kingdom. Or if he wants money at Newcastle, and has goods at Worcester, or at any other clothing town, sending his goods to be sold by the factory of the Bank of Worcester, he may remit by the bank to Newcastle, or anywhere else, as readily as if his goods were sold and paid for, and no exactions made upon him for the convenience he enjoys. This discourse of banks, the reader is to understand, to have no relation to the present posture of affairs, with respect to the scarcity of current money, which seems to have put a stop to that part of a stock we call credit, which always is, and indeed must be, the most essential part of a bank, and without which no bank can pretend to subsist at least, to advantage. A bank is only a great stock of money put together, to be employed by some of the subscribers, in the name of the rest, for the benefit of the whole. This stock of money subsists not barely on the profits of its own stock, for that would be inconsiderable, but upon the contingencies and accidents which multiplicity of business occasions. As, for instance, a man that comes for money, and knows he may have it tomorrow, perhaps he is in haste, and won't take it today. Only, that he may be sure of it tomorrow, he takes a memorandum under the hand of the officer, that he shall have it, whenever he calls for it, and this memorandum we call a bill. Tomorrow, when he intended to fetch his money, comes a man to him for money, and, to save himself the labor of telling, he gives him the memorandum or bill aforesaid for his money. The second man does as the first, and a third does as he did, and so the bill runs about a mouth, two, or three. And this is that we call credit, for by the circulation of a quantity of these bills, the bank enjoys the full benefit of as much stock in real value as the supposititious value of the bills amounts to, and wherever this credit fails, this advantage fails. For immediately all men come for their money, and the bank must die of itself. For I am sure no bank, by the simple improvement of their single stock, can ever make any considerable advantage. I confess, a bank who can lay a fund for the security of their bills, which shall produce first an annual profit to the owner, and yet make good the passant bill, may stand, and be advantageous too, because there is a real, and a supposititious value both, and the real always ready to make good the supposititious. And this I know no way, to bring to pass but by land, which, at the same time, that it lies transferred to secure the value of every bill given out, brings in a separate profit to the owner, and this way no question, but the whole kingdom might be a bank to itself, though no ready money were to be found in it. I had gone on in some sheets with my notion of land being the best bottom for public banks, and the easiness of bringing it to answer all the ends of money deposited with double advantage. But I find myself happily prevented by a gentleman who has published the very same, though since this was wrote, and I was always master of, so much wit, as to hold my tongue, while they spoke who understood the thing better than myself. Mr. John Asgill, of Lincoln's Inn, in a small tract entitled, Several Assertions Proved, in order to create another species of money than gold and silver, has so distinctly handled this very case, with such strength of argument, such clearness of reason, such a judgment, and such a style, as all the ingenious part of the world, must acknowledge themselves extremely obliged to him for that piece. At the sight of which book I laid by all that had been written by me on that subject, for I had much rather confess myself incapable of handling that point like him, than have convinced the world of it by my impertinence. Of the highways. It is a prodigious charge the whole nation groans under for the repair of highways, which, after all, lie in a very ill posture too. I make no question, But if it was taken into consideration by those who have the power to direct it, the kingdom might be wholly eased of that burden, and the highways be kept in good condition, which now lie in a most shameful manner in most parts of the kingdom, and in many places wholly unpassable, from whence arise tolls and impositions upon passengers and travelers, and, on the other hand, trespasses and encroachments upon lands adjacent, to the great damage of the owners. The rate for the highways is the most arbitrary and unequal tax in the kingdom. In some places two or three rates of sixpence per pound in the year, in others the whole parish cannot raise wherewith to defray the charge, either by the very bad condition of the road or distance of materials, in others the surveyors raise what they never expend, and the abuses, exactions, connivances, frauds, and embezzlements are innumerable. The Romans, while they governed this island, made it one of their principal cares to make and repair the highways of the kingdom, and the chief roads we now use are of their marking out. The consequence of maintaining them was such, or at least so esteemed, that they thought it not below them to employ their legionary troops in the work. And it was sometimes the business of whole armies, either when in winter quarters or in the intervals of truce or peace with the natives. Nor have the Romans left us any greater tokens of their grandeur and magnificence than the ruins of those causeways and streetways which are at this day to be seen in many parts of the kingdom, some of which have by the visible remains been discovered to traverse the whole kingdom, and others for more than 100 miles are to be traced from colony to colony, as they had particular occasion. The famous highway or street called Wadling Street, which some will tell you began at London Stone, and passing that very street in the city which we to this day call by that name, went on west to that spot where Tyburn now stands, and then turned northwest in so straight a line to St. Albans, that it is now the exactest road in one line for 20 miles in the kingdom, and though disused now as the chief, yet is as good, and, I believe, the best road to St. Albans, and is still called the Streetway. From whence it is traced into Shropshire, above 160 miles, with a multitude of visible antiquities upon it, discovered and described very accurately by Mr. Camden. The Foss, another Roman work, lies at this day as visible, and as plain a high causeway, of above 30 feet broad, ditched on either side, and coped and paved, where need is as exact, and every jot as beautiful as the King's New Road through Hyde Park, in which figure it now lies from near Marshfield to Cirencester, and again from Cirencester to the hill, 3 miles on this side Gloucester, which is not less than 26 miles, and is made use of as the great road to those towns, and probably has been so for 1,000 years with little repairs. If we set aside the barbarity and customs of the Romans as heathens, and take them as a civil government, we must allow they were the pattern of the whole world for improvement and increase of arts and learning, civilizing and methodizing nations and countries conquered by their valor. And if this was one of their great cares, that consideration ought to move something. But to the great example of that generous people I will add 3 arguments. 1. It is useful, and that as it is convenient for carriages, which in a trading country is a great help to negotiation, and promotes universal correspondence, without which our inland trade could not be managed. And under this head I could name 1,000 conveniences of a safe, pleasant, well-repaired highway, both to the inhabitant and the traveler, but I think it is needless. 2. It is easy. I question not to make it appear it is easy to put all the high roads, especially in England, in a noble figure, large, dry, and clean, well drained, and free from floods, unpassable sloughs, deep cart ruts, high ridges, and all the inconveniences they now are full of, and, when once done, much easier still to be maintained so. 3. It may be cheaper, and the whole assessment for the repairs of highways forever be dropped, or applied to other uses for the public benefit. Here I beg the reader's favor for a small digression. I am not proposing this as an undertaker, or setting a price to the public for which I will perform it, like one of the projectors I speak of, but laying open a project for the performance, which, whenever the public affairs will admit our governors to consider of, will be found so feasible, that no question they may find undertakers enough for the performance. And in this undertaking age I do not doubt, but it would be easy at any time, to procure persons at their own charge to perform it for any single county, as a pattern and experiment for the whole kingdom. The proposal is as follows. First, that an act of parliament be made with liberty for the undertakers to dig and trench, to cut down hedges and trees, or whatever is needful for ditching, draining, and carrying off water, cleaning, enlarging and leveling the roads, with power to lay open or enclose lands, to encroach into lands, dig, raise, and level fences, plant and pull up hedges or trees for the enlarging, widening, and draining the highways, with power to turn either the roads or watercourses, rivers and brooks, as by the directors of the works, shall be found needful, always allowing satisfaction to be first made to the owners of such lands, either, by assigning to them equivalent lands or payment in money, the value to be adjusted by two indifferent persons, to be named by the Lord Chancellor or Lord Keeper for the time being, and no watercourse to be turned from any water mill without satisfaction first made, both to the landlord and tenant. But before I proceed, I must say a word or two to this article. The chief, and almost the only, cause of the deepness and foulness of the roads, is occasioned by the standing water, which for want of due care to draw it off by scouring and opening ditches and drains, and other watercourses, and clearing of passages, soaks into the earth, and softens it to such a degree, that it cannot bear the weight of horses and carriages, to prevent which, the power to dig, trench, and cut down, and see mentioned above will be of absolute necessity. But because the liberty seems very large, and some may think it is too great a power, to be granted to any body of men over their neighbors, it is answered. 1. It is absolutely necessary, or the work cannot be done, and the doing of the work is of much greater benefit than the damage can amount to. 2. Satisfaction to be made to the owner and that first to, before the damage be done, is an unquestionable equivalent. And both together, I think, are a very full answer to any objection in that case. Besides this act of Parliament, a commission must be granted to 15 at least, in the name of the undertakers, to whom every county shall have power to join 10, who are to sit with the said 15 so often and so long as the said 15 do sit for affairs relating to that county, which 15, or any 7 of them, shall be directors of the works, to be advised by the said 10, or any 5 of them, in matters of right and claim, and the said 10, to adjust differences in the countries, and to have right by process, to appeal in the name either of lords of manors, or privileges of towns. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.